Hello and welcome back to Talk a Good Game, the Meath Chronicle Sports Podcast with myself, Ferdinand Lynch, and we're joined by Jimmy Gagan today. Jimmy, you're making your return
back,
on the podcast. How are you keeping?
You're doing the podcast after a few good, very good, you know, and so good to be back with you, lads.
I think we deserved a bit of intro music for him, maybe a little bit of Eminem, Look Who's Back.
Return Mac
is back, Return of the Mac.
Roxy Music or Horsnips will do me, lads.
So just running down through what we're going to look through today, I suppose a good point to start is Meade's defeat at the hands of Dublin, another defeat in the Leinster Championship. Your initial kind of feeling after, Fertile?
Look, at on the face of it, it's I think it's our second biggest drubbing by Dublin in a Leinster campaign. Mm-hmm. I think 2020 we were about by 21 points, and that cold, dark, empty night above in Croke Park, November night in Croke Park. We got a good hiding that night. But I think this is our second biggest one. But it didn't feel like that coming away from Croke Park. And I know I'm probably people say, oh, you know, take off the green and gold tinted glasses that you're never willing to criticise. But I do criticise when criticism is needed. But I thought the players performed very admirably on Sunday. Like, you couldn't run down through the team and pick out one guy who played poorly. Now, it's probably a sad reflection that Dublin weren't probably up to scratch and we played, you know, pretty well and we're still back by 16 points. It shows the gap that's there at the minute. But I walked away from Croke Park disappointed, obviously, to lose by 16 points. They got a goal 3 minutes into injury time, which kind of, you know, broke the spread. The spread was 13 points with the bookies. So the bookies were pretty much nailed on, but for long periods of the game Meath were in it, 5 points down, 6 points down, 2 points up in the first, in the early stages. I thought, Jesus, you know, are we onto something here? But I came away pleased. I was disappointed for Sean Brennan that he was dropped. I know Colm O'Rourke said in his post-match interview that he had a knee injury and they're kind of managing that injury, that there was no point in putting him back into the firing line if he was going to be carrying a knock. But I thought Billy Hogan did well. He was definitely gung-ho and footloose and fancy-free and coming out of the goals, and it gave us a few sweet scary, hairy moments. Yeah. Absolutely. But I thought defensively we were quite sound. I thought Adam O'Neill was brilliant. Donald Keoghan was his usual excellent self. I thought Kieran Caulfield was outstanding, probably our best player on the day. Ronan Jones was very effective physically and driving forward with the ball from midfield. And I thought Jordan Morris looked a threat. Surprised, actually, that he was taken off. James Conlon didn't get as much ball into him as we probably would have liked. And Matt Costello worked his socks off further out the field. But so, overall, and Owen Frayne as well was a good threat. Mm. What let them down, particularly in that first half, was the amount of turnovers. I think Dublin had 25 turnovers in the first half and scored 1-5 off them. Yeah. And especially that goal was a real killer. The way we coughed up possession when we were on the attack, and then we allowed Niall Scully break from his defence and travel maybe 50, 60 yards with the ball unchallenged before it got to Bugler, who travelled nearly 50, 60 yards without hopping it or bouncing or soling it. How he's allowed to get away with that. The referee drove me bonkers because he pulled up Billy Hogan for, you know, kind of running around in a circle, but not impacting the game. And then did Keane McBride on a mark for steps, yeah, you couldn't see that Bunker had taken 13 steps.
I think that was because he didn't indicate it was a mark. You have to indicate it as a mark.
Oh, is that what it was?
Right, yeah, you have to put up, you know, up like a rope.
So he didn't put his hand up and he stood.
This is what the guys on the television seem to think, you know. Eamon Fitzmaurice, you know, was the co-commentator there. And he indicated that seemed to be. So it's a bit like rugby. I didn't know you had to do that now.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't.
And no. For a midfield mark to claim the mark, you have to put your hand up.
Well,
referee would blow the whistle already. So you have to claim the mark.
He was around midfield at that point, you know. Yeah. But that was, I believe, why he...
Right, because then what? So he obviously took the mark, but didn't claim it and stood still. and because he stood still for too long or moved around for too long, referee did him for steps. Well, but yet he didn't do the bugger one.
Well, yeah, but, and yet, it, you know, that mark, that forward, don't get me going on this forward mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, if you take a ball into the chest, but, I mean, Keane McBride, went, this is what the mark is supposed to be, to encourage high feeling. And Keane McBride went up, you might remember the Dom and Schwerger, went up and caught the ball high, yeah. Perfect mark, you would think. But and he was penalised.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but anyway, moving on, I found the whole thing a very dispiriting experience watching it because of what you said, Fergal, because it was Mead at their ultimate best.
Well, I wouldn't say they were at their ultimate
best. Well, I think they were close enough to it. They were very close to their best.
Mm.
And we were humiliated, not humiliated, no. My
humbled.
My aspiration. Humbled. Now, I wasn't at the game, and I can't. But I'm going to say, I was extremely disappointed to see so few Mead supporters there.
Yeah, well, we'll come to that in a minute. Yeah. But getting back to the thing of where you said Mead were at their very, very best.
Yeah, I think
they weren't because they coughed up possession 25 times.
Well, I think they were close to their best.
And there was also times when we did really well, worked the ball up to 45 metres out, 50 metres out, and then we tried to tread a hand pass through the eye of a needle and a Dublin hand got in and broke it down. Or we tried to play the long ball in a diagonal, which didn't work on a couple of occasions. But I said on the other boys' podcast, the We Are Me podcast, that, you know, I'm not sure if we had 20, 22 attacks in the first half. 15 or 16 of them were good. The right decision was made at the end of them.
Yeah,
some of the shooting, Owen Frayn missed one. Jordan Morris missed one. I think Doughty McGowan missed one as well. That there were poor execution, but the decision was right.
Well, I felt...
But there were other times that the decision making was poor, and that's where, in my opinion,
simple hand pass now.
Yeah, me didn't play to the
rest. Well, I think, you know, in the first half, they did definitely play, and the second half, they just marginally were below their best because they were caught out, but they were under pressure by the Dublin kick out. They put a lot of pressure on the Mead kick
out.
On
our kick out,
And that sort of helped to slant the balance, as it were. Mm. But I think, you know, I found it very, very dispiriting.
Our kick out completely malfunctioned in that final 10, 15 minutes. Like Dublin outscored us by 2-3 to a point in the last 12 minutes.
Does it happen if Sean Brennan isn't those?
Possibly as well. Yeah. It wasn't something that Billy Hogan did wrong. Okay, I think it was, as Jimmy said, it was the Dublin press just limited our options. And Colin O'Rourke said it as well. You'll hear it when we play Colin's report. Dublin set up their three lines of four, as they did against Derry, to set up four in their full forward line. Four lined up behind them and then four behind them again, just outside the 45. Basically saying, you know, if you want to beat our press, you're going to have to kick it over our heads, but we still have men back there and we don't think that you're going to be capable.
Yeah, they're a very, very different team. They just took it up a few notches. And there was that sense that they could have taken it up another few notches as well, if they had to.
They're hoers because... You know, you think you're in a game and we were a couple of points early on in the game, we were a couple of points up, and then even at 3-2, 3-all, even at 1-3-3 after Bugler scored the goal, you're thinking, oh, we're still in this. Then next thing, they get 2 points.
Yeah.
All of a sudden it's 5. Then you look at it and all of a sudden it's 7 or 8. Well, and then you're having to claw it back again.
It's death by a thousand cuts.
They're just strangling teams. Yeah.
That's the way they are. Yeah. And that's their beauty and that's their strength.
Jimmy, getting back to that other point that you started to make, the official attendance was 21,500 or something.
Yeah.
4,000 or 5,000 of them were probably Derry, Westmeath, Galway, Tipperary, Camogie supporters.
Sure, yeah.
So a lot of them were gone because of pissed rain. And we actually got wet in the press box, which doesn't happen that often. The rain was driving in on top of us. That's how wet it was. So a lot of the Camogie supporters left. So I would say for the Mead Dublin game, there was 15,000, 16,000.
And would you say there was 1,000 Mead supporters there? Probably not. It didn't look like it. from what I could see.
Well, we just about...
There was a sarcastic comment, actually, Parson, the commentators, there were, the camera veered to these group, very small group of Meath supporters.
Up on the hill.
And I think it was Eamon Fitzmaurice just saying, oh, that's great camera work to find out the Meath supporters, because, there were so few of them around. And I didn't, and I was looking at you, obviously the camera was... into the Cusick stand.
I seen him in the car park after the game. If I'd known he was been smart like that, I would have hit him in the shoulder.
You couldn't,
and ran.
You couldn't see any green. I couldn't see one green and go, you could have said, remember 2001.
There was actually an element of 2001 early in the first half. There was a couple of Meath supporters that managed to make their way up onto the upper deck of the Hogan stand. And there was a spell of Mead possession when it was about 3-3 or 3-2 to Mead or to Dublin, when it was close anyway. Yeah. And it was about 10 or 15 Mead passes, and it was reminiscent of the day against Kerry in 2001. Everyone was, then next thing you brought down.
How,
and don't
how we suffered for that. What did you think of it, Tom?
I thought Mead performance. I agree with Farrell in the fact that I thought it was a very good Mead performance, to be honest with you.
For the most part.
The last 20 minutes or so was tough to watch. I was a little bit annoyed by some of the comments made, I say, on the Sunday game yesterday evening.
I didn't see it yet. No.
Yeah, Sean Kavanagh. It passed a comment saying that this game was over after 15 minutes today, when the Dublin goal came on around the 20th minute, if I'm right in saying that.
He's certainly not right there, because the Dublin goal came in the 20th minute. After 15 minutes, it was 15 and a half minutes, it was 3 points over.
Exactly. and then there was more analysis of, as I know you touched on it a bit, they were analysing Meads, and Mead were sloppy at times, and maybe... If they were coming back to making the point around, and I know we might touch on this in a minute, that they were coming back to the point that the two managers made after in the press conference about the Leinster Championship structure. But still and all, I thought it was a bit unfair to use Mead's individual performance yesterday as a scapegoat to try and make that point.
Well, especially when both managers went at pains to say, this isn't Dublin's fault, this isn't Mead's fault.
Yeah.
This is a systemic problem with the provincial championships, in that one team has just blown everybody else away, and the reward or the prize at the end of a provincial championship is now to know where you're going to be in terms of the Sam Maguire race. Yeah. But there's also a huge bearing on that placed on the league. So, you know, that's nearly been relegated. So the point that Colm O'Rourke and Desi Farr were kind of trying to push yesterday was that, you know, let's play the Leinster Championship before the league. That way, you know where you finished in your Leinster Championship or your provincial championship. Yeah. And now, if you want to get in to the Sam Maguire, you're going to have to perform in the league, which is a more consistent competition played against teams of a similar standard. Like, there's a reason why Dublin are in the Division 1 league final and why Meath were... fifth or sixth in Division 2.
But were they talking...
completely different standards.
Were they also talking about the Ulster and the Munster and the Connacht Championship?
Well, they said that they were saying, apart from the obvious outlier, which is the Ulster Championship, and that's the one where there's five or six teams are...
Connacht kind of...
Well, Connacht, you have two teams, maybe. Roscommon aren't really in the running. Munster is one team. Cork wouldn't keep it kicked out to Kerry.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a problem with the provincial champs. I have no problem in keeping them if teams want to play them. But play them, I think, in January, February. Start your leagues at the end of February, March. Play them on into the beginning of May, and then go straight into the championship down in May, June, July.
I completely agree with that. I think I touched on that a bit in the colour piece that's in the Mead Chronicle this week. But just to go back as well, on the Sunday game last night, they were talking about taking Dublin out of Leinster as well, and there was that kind of comment made there.
Putting them where and what?
I only seen clips of it. Like, do you know what I mean? But
We were talking to a fella there at lunchtime, and he says, people are wrong. You know, you take Dublin out of Leinster, and all of a sudden Leinster is a very good provincial competition. I would argue that. It's a competitive It's not very good.
It's not very good.
It's competitive because the other 10 teams that compete in the Leinster Championship are of, well, seven of them are of a similar standard.
Yeah.
So, if you, you know, you could have a good provincial championship with Mead, Loud, Kildare, Westmead, Leash, Offaly.
Well, I've advocated the 32, you know, the...
the open draw.
The Champions League. Four groups.
Eight groups of four.
Bit of seeding and that, like.
A bit of seeding. You'd have to have it. So and
yeah, well, you just put your eight quarterfinalists as your top seeds, and I think as well. Yeah, I'd be a big advocate for that as well. But you are going to end up then with teams getting awful hidings. I like the ladies' way it's done. Let's have a senior championship, an intermediate championship, and a junior championship.
Yeah,
and you earn your right to go up. Okay, the Tailteann Cup is giving second tier teams a game, but look at the two winners of it so far, Mead and Westmead. Have they really kicked on? Have they improved from it? You know, it's the same in the Joe McDonagh Cup. When you go up to the next level, you're going to struggle. But if you've got a competitive intermediate football championship, with let's say there's 12 teams in each of them, obviously there's not going to be 12 down the bottom one, but in the junior one, but let's say you have the top 12 teams playing the Sam Maguire and the top two come up, so the two finalists from the intermediate, not this just one, the winner, bring the two finalists up into the Sam Maguire for the next year from the intermediate, and you know, have a playoff to relegate two teams out of the Sam Maguire. I think that's a better way, and you're playing for a substantial piece of silverware. You're going to be crowned All Ireland Intermediate Champions, or like the way it is in every county championship.
Certainly, I don't think anyone with an invested interest in GAA, I mean, be the players, supporters, the media, I don't think anyone is benefiting from the way the structure is at the moment.
Well, crowds are, they're showing it. There was a terrible crowd in Pearce Stadium last week, I believe.
Pearce Park, rather. Very poor.
Portlaoise yesterday.
Portlaoise, you can see the vast, you know, empty seats.
Is it too dear?
Croke Park.
It's too dear for people.
I don't think so, Fergal, because I don't like going back all the time, but you know, if you go back to the when Dublin and Meath were equal partners, you know, 60,000-70,000 people willing to pay into Croke Park. So I mean,
not 25 quid, and they were willing to pay into Croke Park for what were competitive games. The world and its mother knew that Meade Dublin game yesterday was not.
Well, that's the point. It's not competitive.
So it was 25 quid.
I think they'd pay if it was competitive.
You know, if you and your wife were going to bring your kid, who's an adult kid, to the game, it was going to cost you 75 quid.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, that's before you've had a bottle of minerals and your sandwiches made in your tinfoil. And eat them out of the boot of the car before you go into the ground.
That's part of GAA tradition. Don't laugh at that.
But that's what I mean. Like, so your day is going to cost you 100 quid minimum to get a hiding for an adult, two adults and one adult child. It would say an over 18 kid. Okay, for under 16s, I think it was a fiver, and to the hill was 15 quid, but it got soaked going there, yes.
And yet,
I think it's too dear. And then people will say, "Ah, well, you know, look how much the Premier League is." No point comparing ourselves to that. It's a different.
But yet, the GAA made what, 6-7 million last year?
Mm.
And once they're doing that, they're going to keep on, you know, they're going to be happy with this. Yeah. Even though the crowds are going down, and that should be a warning for them.
But the championships, what they're banking on is the championships kicking into gear at these group stage things, at these Sam Maguire. That's what they're banking on, where you'll have, you know, you'll have high quality games then, and they're hoping to get your 15, 20,000 at standalone games, and then get into the quarterfinals to get 50, 60,000 at quarterfinals, semifinals before your 80,000 at All Ireland finals. That's what they're banking on. They don't care about the 4,000 that, you know, would go to see the Loud game yesterday. But wasn't 4,000 at Meath and Longford? Jesus, it wasn't the colour of it.
Yeah.
But. Why wasn't
first round matches?
Why wasn't Meath and Dublin yesterday in Navan?
Exactly.
In hindsight, I know it was a great thing, but somebody obviously campaigned to get that game in Croke Park, because if Longford had beaten Meath, that game was going to be in Pearse Park.
Yeah.
So why wasn't the game in Navan? Now, I know I said before, look, it does the Meath players no harm. It's good to get them experience playing in Croke Park. It's where everybody wants to play. You want to play in Croke Park. yesterday was just
having said that for it wouldn't have made the inside, but
you would have got more Meath supporters there would have went. It might have been 15 quid in instead of 25. The GA have to up the prices for games in Croke Park because it costs so much just to put the open up the shutters in Croke Park.
I don't know if you remember that 2021 game in Croke Park where Dublin kind of stretched on early on, but Meath came back to them a bit, and you could feel, even at that stage, you could feel the atmosphere lifting a bit.
Yeah.
That place was absolutely dead yesterday.
Yeah, it was
really dead. Like.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's the lack of competition, the competitive edge.
Yeah, if it had been closer, it might have been a little bit livelier, even with a smaller crowd, because I remember at the Christy Ring Cup final, which I still say was one of the best atmospheres I was ever at in Croke Park, and... not the best, but one of the best.
Antrim against Antrim.
Against Antrim. And there was only 1,500 people there, but we were all huddled together on the Hogan stand, and it was a rip-roaring contest, really thrilling finish, and it was just mental, and the atmosphere was electric. So
when Antrim scored the point, there wasn't, or whatever.
Even the replay in Croke Park was just a brilliant occasion. So
the one in Newry, and I think Martin and his
it's the game has to give the supporters something to cheer about. You know, you hear Jurgen Klopp saying, oh, we want to get the famous Anfield atmosphere behind us. But if your players aren't giving them something to cheer about, how can they get up? There's no point. You hear the Liverpool fans yesterday trying to sing and cheer and urge the team on when they're 1-0 down to Crystal Palace. There's nothing to get them excited about that. But if the players on the field are playing a tough, tight game and it's entertaining and exciting to watch, the supporters in the crowd will get up. And it doesn't matter whether you have 50,000 or 1,500, you'll get a decent enough atmosphere. I'm not saying the players in the field will notice it, but the people in the crowd will remember it, and they'll want to come again the next day, and then the next day, and then word of mouth gets out. It's like anything, when you see a team doing well or you're impressed by it, you'll go to watch it live.
Yeah, I do think the players do get a boost from that.
If they can hear it, it should have definitely been a provincial, even more park maybe yesterday or whatever it was. You get a decent atmosphere, decent crowd.
I'm not sure why it has to be.
All these games have to be in.
Well, we've a 5-week gap now.
Yeah.
After that, the boys are heading off for, somebody said, a holiday in Portugal.
Yeah.
But it's not quite a holiday, and they're heading off. I'm not sure when it is. I think it's at the beginning of May, heading off for a warm weather training camp. It'll be hard work.
Yeah.
They'll have 5 weeks, I think, as I said, to the start of the Sam Maguire round robin thing. So there'll be hard work. There'll be 2 or 3 training sessions a day. There'll be recovery sessions. There'll be video analysis. It'll be 4 days of the group getting together and getting to spend, 24 hours a day for the 4 days together. Which, if they survive that, they'll survive anything.
Now, before we go any further, we went off on a bit of a tangent there. But we will, at this stage, I think, play Tom O'Rourke's press conference from yesterday, and we'll come back and go into other details about the Meath Miners, and also speak about what Tom said as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, there was loads of positives, Brendan. I thought the first 20-25 minutes we played quite well, and we got some nice scores and defended very well in that period of time. So there are positives. There was a lot of lads played quite well, and for lads so inexperienced, I think there were 6 of them either playing their second or third Leinster Championship match. So, you know, you can't buy the experience of playing in Croke Park. We've all had days, the fellas that were with me, Stephen and Trevor and Barry Callaghan, we all had days like that in Croke Park, and the test for us is just to come back from it.
At half-time, Meath very much in the game, just 5 points behind, and had, as you said, played some very, very good football. But I think the experience of Dublin in the second half certainly told. They were able to bring in so many All-Ireland medals jangling in their pockets.
Yeah, well, I said in the preview before the game that Dublin had players that had more All-Ireland medals than we had fellas who played in the Leinster Championship. I'd say about half of our team had less than the 8 All-Irelands that some of their players. And the other thing, that's why they are All-Ireland champions, and that's why the likes of James McCarthy has won whatever 9 All-Irelands, because in my time playing football, I'd say that James McCarthy and Brian Fenton and Kieran Kilkenny and Conor Callaghan are probably better players than I have ever seen here. So we have to take that into account. Yet, it sets a bar for us to try and get to. We have a young squad. Within a couple of years, I would hope that we'd have the physique and the fitness, which only comes with time, to match a lot of the Dublin players.
There was a bit of a collapse with the kickouts, particularly in the second half column. That turned out to be a major, major problem. Dublin were winning so many of Meath's kickouts that turned out to be one of the influences in the game.
Absolutely. They pushed up a line of four in the full forward line, a line of four and a line of four, and took their chances that if it went over that line, that we wouldn't do them the sort of damage that Derry did to them. And of course, they completely hemmed us in. And I suppose we were left with a long kick-out option to Cian McBride was about all that we were left with. So I wouldn't fault Billy Hogan on that. It's just there was a systems failure all over the pitch.
You knew coming up that this was going to be not impossible, but a very, very difficult task coming up against Dublin. Do you feel that there was progress visible on the team in relation to the National League performances and stepping up today against the All-Ireland champions, that Meath did play some very good football?
Yeah, we can take a lot of positives from the first half. Again, I thought it was an improvement on a lot of our National League performances. I suppose last Sunday we improved but against Division 4 opposition, and now we came up against the very best. So it shows the vast gulf that there is between teams. And I suppose it reflects our own position. If we are to be brutally honest with it, we are in a sort of second division team, and we have a long way to go.
And of course, Shane Walsh, the injury to Shane Walsh, unfortunate. He's a very unlucky man.
Yeah, very unfortunate. Just a very simple thing on Wednesday night, broke a bone in his foot, puts him out maybe for 8 to 10 weeks. So for a fella who has worked so hard to get back after a serious operation on his hamstring last year, it's really a bad blow personally for him as well as for the team, but most importantly for his own self after, you know, putting in such a huge effort to get himself back in shape.
The gap now is about 5 weeks till the All-Ireland Championship. A lot to work on, but do you feel that the team will have learned a lot from today's experience? I mean, you are playing the best in the country today, or one of the very best anyway. So do you think, what did the immediate reaction do you think will be from the players and the panel to today's performance and their willingness to learn from it?
Well, there's no doubt about the response will be positive. They are an ambitious group. They want to get to the level. It was a stark reality check for them to see how far they have to go, just in case anyone was losing the run of themselves. We haven't closed the gap on Dublin at all. But these players are ambitious and they're willing to work hard. And as I keep saying, a lot of them are very young and lacking experience. I still think we will get a lot better over the next year. And I think we'll even be better by the time the Sam Maguire comes around. Just hope we're not drawn with Dublin.
Patience, I think, is what you're calling for again. And I think that's, everybody would say that that's the right attitude.
Well, there's no quick fix on Meath football. It's not as if we have been dominating, and I've made the point before, at under 20 or 21 level, we haven't been in a final in 20-something years, or a senior club final in Leinster in over 20 years. So it's not as if we have this vast pool of highly qualified winners out there that we can just draft into the team. We've set ourselves on a course of action on a team that we knew was not going to probably be competitive in the short term, but in the belief that within 2 to 5 years that this group will form the backbone of the Meath team for a continuous period of time, and they will be a lot better then.
and you're happy with the learning process is there, and this was a big part of it today. You don't get much bigger learning processes than today.
No, it was a fairly sharp reminder of what football at the very, very top level is, and we have to get bigger, stronger, faster, fitter, cuter, all of those things. But we'll go away and work on it.
What was the thought process with the change of goalkeepers today, Billy coming in for Sean Brennan?
Well, Sean has had a bit of a problem with his knee for the last few weeks, and it has affected his kicking out a little bit, so we didn't think there was any point in maybe putting him in the firing line again after Longford, so he'll be back.
Where does it leave the Leinster championship? I guess, you know, I saw you walk out just beforehand in halftime in the Camogie final, and you know, the stadium was near empty. There's 20,000 here today. Desi talked as well about maybe the need for change. What about yourself?
Well, the Leinster Championship is a shambles, but that's not Dublin's fault. I suppose it's the fault of teams like Meath, who haven't been competitive for a long, long time. But to me, anyway, the obvious thing is the Leinster Championship should be played before the league. It's absolutely ridiculous that teams in the league are waiting, and don't know what competition they're going to be playing in or when they will be playing. If the provincial championships were over, everybody would know exactly before they start the league, particularly those teams in the second and third division, what they had to do to ensure that they were playing in the Sam Maguire. It's very unsatisfactory, the present system.
The game was very, it was keenly contested for the first 90 minutes. The Dublin goal played a
No, absolutely not. We had given the ball away farther up the field, and I suppose it's a sign of a good team. They got the ball back and they punished us. I think we gave away 1-5 from turnovers in the first half when we were competitive, so that was sort of killing us. But no, I wouldn't complain. I admire Dublin. I admire the way they play. I think they have helped save Gaelic football from the negativity of other teams, so I have nothing but the highest admiration for them. Just wish we could beat them occasionally.
So that was Colm O'Rourke speaking to the press after the match. You get the sense that he would, at some stage, like to beat Dublin Fairdale, whether it's in the near future or not.
It was his target when he took over, and you can hear him there. He admits, you know, the gap hasn't closed yet, but he's still pushing that line of looking for patience. He has every faith in this group.
But he also said, Fergal, that he wants to be, you know, a manager after 2 years, and he's nearly there 2 years now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He should be judged on whether they've improved or not. They probably have improved. They have improved somewhat, yeah.
I would say when he said that, I want to be judged after 2 years, I would say he probably meant 2 years of his own team. The first year was a case of getting the players he wanted in. So this is probably really his first year of having the players that he wanted. Like, there was a huge clear out last year, even after the league. So he had a full league campaign and ended up getting rid of a load of different players. So this is probably the first year where he's had a full pre-season, a full National League to work with the players that he's wanted. So I would say this year, see where we are at the end of next year. If there's no obvious improvement by the end of next year, I'm not saying we're going to beat the Dubs. I know Colm said there at the end of it, he'd just like to beat them. I'm not saying we will beat them, but if we can see that gap closing, and Desi Farrell, in his interview with us after the game yesterday, he was quite optimistic from our point of view about where Meath were going. He was saying, you know, that there's definite improvements, that we're an athletic team, and we didn't take a backward step, and we stood up, and we actually forced them into some of the mistakes that they made. It wasn't that Dublin, he didn't feel that it was Dublin that were poor. He felt it was the press that Meath put on, that not taking the backward step. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that the games in the summer will bring Meath on, these three games in the quarterfinal will bring Meath on. And he says, which was great to hear it, although I don't know why. And he did say in it, he says, Mead will beat Dublin someday.
Yeah. he went on to say, like, we just had to make sure it wasn't today.
Yeah, we had to make sure it wasn't.
Yeah, he did say that.
You know, honestly, none of us can see that at the moment.
Yeah, but that, it will turn. You know, none of us could see it in 96, although we were being fed by All-Ireland winning minor and under 21 teams at that stage. And again, that's the point that Colin makes, is that the pick of players that we have now, they're not coming from a position where we're dominant, where we have a dominant club scene, where, you know, we haven't been, no Mead senior club has been in a Leinster senior club final since 2004. You know, when Scream got to it in 2004. Mortgage,
yeah.
And no Mead, Dunshaughlin won it in 2000.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah. And before that, then you're going back to the 80s with Waterstown.
And Summerhill
in the 70s. You know, so it's not as if we have this unbelievable club scene that all are feeding our county teams. We haven't been in an under 20 stroke 21 Leinster final in 10 years or more, I would say. We haven't won in All Ireland at under 21 level since, I don't know when. Did we win one in 93? Won the All-Ireland minor in 90, I think we won one in 93. You know, we haven't, so we're not, that's what Colin was saying, is we're not getting players from the same place that Dublin are getting their players, you know, Kim Cook Crokes and Ballymun, and traditionally strong club football, they've successful underage scene as well at minor and under 20. So their conveyor belt is regularly turning out All-Ireland winners.
But the GAA have to look at this too, because they've created this monster, and it's eaten up, this monster has eaten up everybody else around it, and it'll end up eating up itself, because the GAA will just implode with this, I think, this dominance.
But they've created the monster in Dublin, but, you know, Derry are knocking on their door, and Kerry are knocking on their door, and Mayo are knocking on their door. I want to see Mead knocking on their door. And if those other counties can do it, Derry 5 years ago were contesting the Division 4 National League final.
And Mayo, like, sure.
Now they're second favourites or third favourites to win the All Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, we thankfully haven't been down in Division 4. Hopefully we won't be. We were in Division 3 for a season, but we've been in Division 1.
Yeah.
But we're still not getting any closer. So what's breaking down there?
Yeah, there's been a fair argument. I see a lot of Mead people arguing this point in terms of, is promotion to Division 1 for Mead actually a good thing? I mean, right now in this moment, I know they finished fifth, but is it a good thing? Is it? It's
not now. They're not physically ready for it. I've made the point that, you know, all our top players are 20, 21, 22 years of age. They mightn't like to hear it, but they're still only kids. They're still only boys. They won't become men until they're 26, 27 years of age. They have that physicality, they have that adult strength and conditioning, they have that ability to take the hits. Like, I seen, who was it, hit Kieran Kilkenny during the game yesterday? I think it could have been Donal Keoghan, who is one of the more physically, you know, superior late 20s, early 30s type of figure that should be ready. Didn't make an impact on him.
Yeah.
Barely made an impact on him. But our lads, when your Adam O'Neills and your Kieran Caulfields and Keane McBride and Jordan Morris and all these boys, when they all start hitting 26, 27 years of age, remind that, Jimmy, you get that in a minute. When they all hit 26, 27 years of age, they'll be in their physical prime. And that's what Colin was saying, that he said after one of the league games, in two, three, four years' time will be the start of a three or four year window of opportunity for Mead. When this group of players are physically ready to take on your Dublins and your Kerrys and your Derrys and your Mayos, physically ready.
Well, you know, why there shouldn't be any reason why we can't be as strong as any other team, because as Sean Boylan used to say, eat the same potatoes as we do. You know, there's no reason why we can't. So why is it more hours they're spending in the gym? Are they being sort of fed this? I mean, I don't mean literally a diet every a regular diet.
It's that conveyor belt that I'm saying that I've mentioned is that Dublin bring in, so they bring in players from their, you know, successful minor teams or under 20 teams, and they go into a development squad, and one or two of them come onto the senior panel when they're 23, 24, 25. They don't come on when they're 17, 18. They go off and they do their development and they get physically stronger and they improve. So we're not doing that. What we're having to do is we're having to fast track lads from our minors and our under 20s straight into senior football, whereas Dublin are able to give them 3-4 years of a development team. Because they have such a successful team over the last decade, they only need to bring one or two lads through. We have to bring 8-10 lads through every year for a while there.
Are you able to see, and this is the thing, because like Tom O'Rourke is in a much better position than us to judge this, but can you see the potential that he is speaking about that gives him such confidence to say in 2 or 3 years' time? Do you think that potential is in this group of players?
You look at the group of players, and anybody, any other pundit in the country will tell you, you know, Jordan Morris is one of the most exciting corner forwards in the game. Matthew Costello is one of the most impressive specimens of footballers in the game. Ronan Jones is an outstanding driving forward midfielder. Keane McBride, obviously a professional football club in Australia, saw something in him to offer him a contract. He's come home now and we can see it. Adam O'Neill has been outstanding at fullback. Ross and Ronan Ryan are outstanding young defenders. Individually, every one of those Meath players, for me, and more coming, because there is a good under 20 team coming there as well, have the potential to step up to be as good as any of the Dublin players individually, with the obvious exceptions, you know, your James McCarthy's, your Brian Fenton's, your Conor Callaghan's, Kilkenny's, but they're held in such high regard now because of what they've won, but because of their 8 and 9 All Irelands.
Yeah,
if they didn't have 8 or 9 All-Irelands, they wouldn't be held in the high regard they're in. Whereas some of our lads are outstanding, talented individuals, but now it's about forming a team with them.
It is, because it's some of the players that you mentioned, like Matthew Costello, Jordan Morris, the Ryans, they were all sort of involved with Andy McAtee at this stage, and they have got their development, but it's about bringing the other lads with them, along with them, and developing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, so your Harry O'Higgins's, your Brian O'Halloran's,
Keane
McBride, Owen Frayne is another outstanding footballer. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, James Conlon has been in and out of the team, but Kieran Caulfield is going to get better. Sean Coffey is going to get better. You look what's on the bench then as well. Okay, Shane Walsh was missing there yesterday, but you've Sean Rafferty who's coming through the development squad. Brendan McKeown is given over the football. I've mentioned Brian there yet. You know, Rory Kinsler was off the bench. Keith Curtis, who's probably, you know, was the player of the Intermediate Championship last year. There are really, really talented footballers, but it's about finding that mix and being patient with them and allowing them the time. Yeah. And I hope we haven't driven our listeners away from the podcast this day, because we do have other things to talk about.
The Miners did have a very spirited victory at the weekend. It was the Miners, of course, to beat Westmead. And you know, Tom, they had to win that game.
Yeah.
To survive, they had lost it to Louth and Kildare, and they did. They truly did. It was a good, very good performance by them, and you know, they played against a strong wind. They were clever. You know, you have to be clever in football as in life.
Yeah.
You know, and they were clever in the first half because they moved the ball around because they were playing against the wind, sort of diminished the effect of the conditions, and you know, and when the second half then, they were much more you know, attacking minded as it would be, and they paid some great points.
Yeah.
You know, with Cormac Nugent got a couple of, he ended up with 6 points, 3 very good scores from play. Evan Kelly then, he got 1-2.
It's a good name.
Yeah. Thomas Sheridan, very good player. Kean Tobin, he was excellent as well. You know, really good performance. There were so many other players as well. Pat Crowley got our other goal. So it's something to build for. They're playing now Wexford in the preliminary quarterfinals. That's on
Wednesday week, 24th.
So you know, it's look, it's you never know. A victory like this, they lost the first two matches, as I said, to Kildare and Louth. Not great performances in either, but a victory can do wonders for a team, for a team's morale. They looked brilliant. They looked delighted, and why wouldn't they be after their victory on Saturday?
Yeah.
Now hopefully they'll push on.
Like that, you know. That this Meath team lost by 16 points to Kildare in Stamullen, and Westmeath only lost by 3 points to Kildare.
Yes.
Yet Meath go out. I know swings around and games can differ. So obviously something has changed in the Meath setup. Like, that's an impressive performance, because if Westmeath were only losing by 3 points to Kildare and Meath are losing by 16 points to them, that should suggest that Westmeath are a better team than Meath. But Meath went into their home place. I know they restructured the team a little bit. Kieran Sheridan out in midfield and moving men into the full forward line.
As manager Joe Cowley said, Fergal, you know, teams can set back, especially in this age group. You know, they can get an early setback and they can knock them back on their heels, and they can take it hard to get recovered from it. And maybe that's happened against Kildare. It was not that much, but certainly, you know.
They did look nervous. They looked nervous wrecks that night.
Right. Okay.
They just looked, and everything that they did, they tried to rush it, and every mistake they made, the head just dropped a little further, and everything went well for Kildare that day. But you caught up with the manager.
And some of the other reporters. Brendan Cummins and David Risman asked the questions there that we hear on this tape here. Yes.
Absolutely. So we hear from Joe Cowley now. Okay.
Manager Joe Cowley. Joe, you have to be happy and relieved at that.
Yeah, that was there's a big weight lifted off everybody's shoulders, but especially the players as well. Like, you know, the first two games has hurt them fairly deep. And all we asked them was just to come here now and to really show what they have and what they have in the locker, and I think they've done that there today.
Won comfortably in the end, but there were nervous moments throughout, not just in the second half, but in the first half as well.
Mm. Oh yeah, 100%. First half I thought we were very much in control, you know, with the conditions of the wind that's there. I thought the boys managed the game very well, but like it's energy sapping, and sometimes you can start to stray away from the concentration, and that can happen. You know what I mean? Them chances kind of came, but we still managed to hold out, and it was, you know what I mean, that score within half time was acceptable. But then, yeah, as you said, there was some really hairy moments. We had to go after the game. I probably knew that we were a little bit better than they were, and we had to go after the game. And when the boys turned it on and they got the nose in front, everything started to click into gears. But then we did leave a little bit of gaps at the back, which made it a little bit hairy towards the end, yeah, for sure.
How worried were you in that 10-minute spell before half-time that things weren't going to go your way after they looked as if they were in the previous 20 minutes?
I was happy enough because we had to play against the wind in the first half, and I did say to the lads, maybe not to the players, but I did say to the lads that we'll have just to work hard against the wind. But to the management group, they said, like, if we go in maybe a pint or two down, that's okay because of the way the conditions were. There was a fair breeze in that out there today. Yeah.
It was a huge win, Joe, in the sense of the morale of the team, the existence of the team, really, I suppose, to be getting a fourth, to recover from two defeats and to be looking forward to a fourth game now in the Championship.
Yeah, look, we know we didn't perform at all against Kildare, and you know what I mean, the first place you look at is yourself and making sure that you had everything done. We felt that we did because we had a great run of challenge matches against some quality opposition. So we knew that wasn't us. We maybe just froze, a little bit of nerves and anxiety probably set in, and that can happen at this age group and stuff like that there. But we did a much better performance against Louth, and we probably thought that we would have got the result there. That would have kick-started us. But unfortunately, even if we had bet Louth, we still would have had to come here today to win anyway, just the way the group was going to pan out, you know. So this was the big one. This was the big one to get the result here.
I know you won't like to single out individuals or anything, but a fine second half performance by Cormac Nugent.
Fantastic footballer, really class act from Lavender Matney's Cormac is, and you know, I mean, that was a different position for him today, but we know that he has all that in his locker in terms of his skill and his ability, and it suited him out there today, so it did.
It was a huge hit from Jack Doyle in the first couple of minutes, Joe. I'm not sure if you remember it, but it seemed to really set the tone and the lads really lifted themselves after that.
Yeah, 100%. It gave a great lift to the team. I think it gave a great lift even to the supporters as well. And maybe the big cheer from the supporters probably let the players know that they were being, you know, being, they had the support of them. But it was a great hit to get the whole thing going. Absolutely, 100%, yeah.
The 45th minute, it was like a game of basketball. There was three goal chances. Two at the Mead end and one at the West Mead end. Thankfully, though, you got the one. I'd say your heart was in your mouth, though, for those 40 or 50 seconds.
Yeah, it took our keeper then to come into play. We pulled off an absolutely fantastic save to keep that one out, I think. But, you know, them chances came, and West Mead are no bad team. We knew that coming here, you know, so as soon as they got their hands on the ball from our chance, they had fairly lethal players on the pitch that got it down fairly quick to the other end, and we were a little bit exposed, but we had to call on our keeper then to do his part then as well. But
you could see visibly how much it meant to the lads coming off there after obviously the two defeats, and for such a young group and an inexperienced group, I'd imagine this is a huge win.
Yeah, losing games hurts no matter what way you look at it, and these boys, it really hurt them in the two games, especially the Kildare one. It really did hurt. So this they knew themselves, and you could sense it in the dressing room that they were really, really up for it. We dealt with a lot of the anxiety and nerves in over the last 2 weeks, to be able to deal with it. I told them to relax and to be themselves, and really just go out there and show everybody how good they actually are, you know. And I think they've done that there today.
Wexford up next. You probably wouldn't have been looking too much at them ahead of today, but anything you know about them at this point?
Not at the minute. Now we'll sit down and we'll analyse them, and we'll get video footage, and we'll go through them as best we can, and we'll earmark obviously who their main players are and the way that they play. But they'll be no bad team at this age group. You know what I mean? You really have to perform to your ability, and sometimes if you don't do that at this age group, you can get turned over. So we won't be taking them lightly. Big advantage is it's a home venue for us as well, so that'll be ideal as well. Yeah.
Now, that was Mead Meyer manager Joe Cowley speaking there. A very relieved Joe Cowley,
yeah.
After the two performances.
Yeah, he talked about the weight being lifted off their shoulder, collective shoulders.
Another team looking to bounce back then is tomorrow night, Tuesday, the under-20s who lost to Dublin last week as well. It wasn't a great week for Mead teams going up to Dublin last week. But the under-20s lost 13 points to 1-7 to Dublin, but now they have to play a quarter final against Laois tomorrow night, Tuesday, in Ashbourne. So that would be a good test. As we mentioned before, this is the All Ireland winning minor team from 3 years ago, or at least it's meant to be. But there's been huge changes. There's new players have come into the panel. I think in the first game that Mead won, I think only five of that All Ireland winning minor team actually started this under 20 game, which is a huge turnover. But a lot of that was down to injuries, but you know, lads like Captain Liam Kelly now seem to be coming back, and Sean Leonard is coming back, and so Mead are getting their players back at the right time to play Laois in the quarter final tomorrow night, so that should be a good one. The hurlers are in action on Saturday.
Yes, Ballycran.
We're going to have to see who's going to draw the who's the lucky one to get to go to Ballycran.
Tell me, have you ever been to Ballycran?
And it's not a slight on having to cover Mead hurling, not at all. We've some of our best days covering.
Yeah, well,
teams.
I had a great day going up there for the league to Ballycran there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, but some of our best days have been following the Mead hurlers, you know, last year winning the league and the Christy Ring Cup, and they're the ones that have given us probably most consistent. But the thoughts of going to Ballycran,
it's just that journey, yeah.
Ballycran,
it's via Belfast. It's a trek and a half.
Country, so I don't mind going up there, but
so that's a big one for the Mead hurlers. It's probably a game that they have earmarked as a must win, because you have further games against Kerry, Laois, Offaly, and Westmead. They don't get any easier, and that's not a cliche. They're not getting any easier than the one against Down. Down have beaten us twice already this year. The last time in the league, Jim, as you've already referenced it quite comfortably.
And the Keogh Cup before that.
Yes.
Has there been enough time, lads, for the management team to settle in there and prepare for this game?
No, definitely not. No.
It's
a bit unfair on Stephen Lynch, but he's bravely stepped in there. What can they do, you know?
Yeah, so
he's stepped in. And well, I haven't said that. Stephen knows he's a great he was a great hurler, and he knows his squad very well. You know, yeah. So he's a good man to have.
Is it enough time for the management? It's now up to the players. The players made this decision that they wanted to change, so they've got what they wanted. Mm. So yeah. Stop blaming management.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
no, really. But as well though, like it would be unfair for the on the management team to assess the management's performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Given the fact that
they're this late
time.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Stephen Clinch and Trevor Cummins will be going in there to try and do a whole lot different than what was being done before.
Yeah.
And just looking to tighten things up, maybe sharpen sharpen the minds and the focus on the games ahead. I don't think they'll be changing a whole lot of in terms of style of play.
Well,
certainly not in terms of
personnel.
They
haven't got the time.
Haven't got it. No.
No. Trevor is coach there, of course. Yeah. Mm. But that's what I was saying. Stephen had worked with Saoirse Bulfin, the previous manager, so he knows how they're playing and strategies. And he knows the players. So
the under-20 hurlers. The under-20 hurlers are out in the first round of the Leinster proper, so they qualified from the Tier 2 competition.
Sean Corrigan's team.
So Sean Crash Corrigan's team, yeah. So they're playing on Friday night. Again, we'll have to draw straws on that one. In Hawkfield, meet against Kildare in that. So wish them the best of luck as well. That'll be a big game for them. Yeah, and the performances so far in the Tier 2 competition have indicated that they're more than capable of getting the win there against what's regarded as a very promising Kildare team.
Yep.
But best of luck to Crash Corrigan and the under-20s in that one. The Mead Ladies, of course, are out.
The Mead Ladies are out, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Can finally get back on the horse after a very rocky National League, but managed to survive and quite comfortably.
Very well.
Yeah,
started and finished, I think, as you mentioned in your preview, you know, started well with a win over Mayo and finished well with a win over Cork. So,
if you don't mind me saying as well, this game against Leash is, it's not, as I said, it's not like, you know, Leash are very poor off it. It's fair to say you'd be surprised if Mead didn't come away with the win there, you know.
The next game against Kildare will be a lot tougher. Kildare are the Division 2 champions, and
definitely a tougher test.
It'll be a definitely tougher test. But the reward, of course, for a Leinster final for the Mead Ladies is to play on the same card as the men's Leinster senior final on the 12th of May. So we might get another trip to Croke Park yet, you never know.
Yeah.
Hopefully all going well.
There'll be no shortage of candidates for that one.
Yeah, so but in case anybody criticises us as being just a GA podcast, there was plenty of other sporting success for Mead artists, as we like to call them. Gordon Elliott had a decent entry.
Yeah, absolutely. I if you don't mind saying as well, that his training dealt with to finish second in an absolute superb Grand National.
Yeah.
It was an incredible training performance. Yeah. An 11-year-old in a really, really top quality Grand National.
Yeah.
I thought bar training T Hupu to win the Stairs Hurdle from bringing, he brought T Hupu from Ferryhouse in December straight to Cheltenham. That was a great training performance. But that possibly is his second best training performance this year, you know.
It was a good race. It was good to watch, and somebody who's not a racing expert at all. It was great to see so many horses in the finish. But has that been helped by has the race been diminished a little bit by all the safety things that's been brought in, or do you think it's only right that it's been brought in?
Some of the, if I had to call them, I don't know, you'd call them old. Yeah.
The racing authorities seem to have cowed to the animal welfare.
Well, a little bit. But I mean, a real racing purist will say that the race was a much better race years ago, right? My view on it would be that the changes that have been gradually made to the course over the last couple of years, as well as the decrease in size this year, has allowed a lot of top quality horses rise to the top and really have a go at that national. And you're probably seeing a better standard of horse running in that Grand National now than you would have 20 years ago. I don't think Ian Maximus runs in that race 20 years ago.
No.
I think William Mullins doesn't take the risk.
Fast finisher, yeah.
Well,
even you talk about, you know, the top quality horses will rise to the top. But such are the vagaries of National Hunt racing that, you know, Coach Rambler, who won the race last year, falls at the first.
Yeah.
And then falls again when, without a jockey, falls again at the second.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the other side of it. They've maintained that entertainment and that thrill value in it as well.
I think got him in the one of the draws or something like that.
Oh, in the meat process, did you?
Something like that.
Yours just fared marginally better than mine, which was pulled out just before the race. But it is great to see, and it was great to see that all the horses got back home safely after the race as well, which is great to see. Like in some of the other races, there were fatalities as well, it is part of horse racing. It's not something that anybody likes to see, but it is part of horse racing. And I know the owners that sold all the horses earlier in the year, their names are escaped.
Caldwell Construction,
they had all the horses with Gordon Elliott. They found, you know, the experience of losing horses to be emotionally too tough. So they severed their ties just
who'd be a National Hunt jockey either. What a way to make a living, you know.
Very tough.
Well, they're very brave people, men and women.
It's the only job in the world where two ambulances follow you around all day.
You're followed
around in your work by two ambulances, So that was a good bit of success, as we said. And it was great to see Found a 50 winning for Becto Stud for Nolan and Valerie Moore. And great to see them winning as well. So
they've kind of struggled to win a big race with that horse, and it was great to see that horse taking off, because he is a good horse.
Then Brighter Days Ahead, of course, winning for Gordon Elliott as well. That was good. Florin Porter was a little bit disappointing, I thought, even though he finished ahead of Hewick, who was a lot of other ground, I think, went against him, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Florin Porter is a funny one. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He's just, you can never really back him with confidence, and I think maybe at this stage he's not at the level that he was.
But he's been a great servant for Gavin Cromwell and his yard. But yeah, so that was it. And we must give a mention to Navan Rugby, the ladies there, who, you know, I think it's been a huge amount of work put into the women's rugby in Navan. This season in particular, Jackie Shields has gone out there. People in Meath will know Jackie Shields as former Ireland rugby international, but also former Meath ladies footballer and
soccer international,
an outstanding sports person. But she's gone out there now as head coach in Navan Rugby, on the ladies' end of it. And in their first year, first year under Jackie, they've had two teams this year, and both teams have, I think, won the double. Definitely the second team has won the league and the cup. I'm pretty sure the first team won the league and the cup. They won the Paul Cusick Cup at the weekend. Again, with full report in this week's Chronicle and a couple of photos from the game as well. So well done to Navan ladies on that.
Craig Williamson, very good PRO.
Thanks to Craig Williamson again. We mentioned Craig a few times, that he keeps us up to date. Best of luck to Ashburn, who are competing in their second Provincial Towns Cup final on Sunday. Second in 3 years, third.
Facing a former Irish international in their speed, right?
Matter of Sean O'Brien, the Tullow tank. Down in Carlow on Sunday, but it's been a difficult season for Ashburn. They were relegated from Leinster League Division 1A, where they were very close to, they won that league title a few years ago, so it's disappointing.
They finished second last, Fergal, so they're involved in a playoff.
Yeah, which they lost, so they were relegated.
Well, it may not, they could still have another chance.
Could they?
There's other machinations going on.
All right, okay.
They could still avoid it, yes.
All right, well,
they lost that tie, that playoff.
And the thing, the word coming through or came through from Leinster Branch was that they were relegated. But
that was still when I was talking to Bill on Friday. But I mean, maybe.
Well, hopefully they can retain the show.
That could be confirmed yesterday now, that's what
But all focus is on the Provincial Towns Cup. We want to wish them the best of luck. There's a lot of good stalwarts there with them, and it'd be great to see them get another one under the belt. It will be tough, but their games against Tullow in the league were tight as well. So, you know, it'll be a tough one, especially playing against Sean O'Brien. It doesn't matter what level it is. Sean O'Brien is wholehearted and one of the toughest men ever to wear the green shirt for Ireland. So he's sure to make life difficult for Ashburn on Sunday. Waller Cup, the roads around Boreen will be busy on Saturday and Sunday as well, with Water Cup cycling. So just to let the motorists around that area be aware, and spectators, if you're interested in cycling, of course the Ross is going to be finishing in Bective in May, so there's a huge interest in cycling in Mead over these next few weeks, starting with the Water Cup in Bormeen over the weekend. So get out there and watch that if you can.
It's another grueling sport. Like, I wouldn't fancy it myself.
It's harder than that. Again, we'll draw straws to see who's going out to that. There's a lot of straws to be drawn before this week is out. I think that pretty much sums it up, lads.
I'd just like to give a mention as well. Not to finish on a sad note, but there was a man that passed away, Joe Clark, last week from Ratoche. Ratoche went through, we all know him as the powerhouse of the last couple of years. But they went through a tough time in the 2000s, and Joe Clark was one of the men that really worked hard to keep them, when they were down in the junior ranks, to keep the club's head above water after they building the clubhouse and that. So, condolences to Joe Clark's family. And
they're good at remembering their own in Ratoche, you know, even the, you know, with the park named after Sean Eve, and I'm sure there'll be some sort of memorial or some sort of honour for a great man like that. As you said, keep the head above water. It's easy to jump on board the bandwagon, but it's when that ship is sinking, it's trying to keep the water out and keep the finger on the hole to stop more floods come in. That's the likes of Joe Clark, obviously, did in Ratoche. So
absolutely, and on a slightly happier note as well, former Meath footballer, give him a mention as well, Eamon Wallace was 30 at the weekend, so he was out celebrating at the Meath and Dublin match, and he was out celebrating in Dublin last night. So happy birthday to Eamon.
Jesus, Eamon Wallace is a former young Meath sports person, Meath Chronicle sports person of the year, and now he's 30.
Let's
wrap that up, man. I'm getting way too old.
Right, we'll wrap it up there, lads. Thanks for listening. Dan, you've been listening to Talk a Good Game. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've listened to another edition of the Meath Chronicle Sports Podcast, Talk a Good Game. Say hi!